Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophet. And in Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of you shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise, take the young child and his mother, and flee into Egypt, and be there until I bring you word. For Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by the night, and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Out of Egypt I have called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceedingly wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken of by Jeremiah the prophet, saying, In Ramah was there a voice heard, lamentation and weeping, and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and would not be comforted, because they are not. But when Herod was dead, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the child's life. And he arose and took the young child and his mother, and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea, the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee, and he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, He shall be called a Nazarene.
It's quite coincidental that we're at this particular point in time in Matthew, and then, of course, the Christmas season is coming on.
The Hanukkah season is coming.
The Hanukkah season is coming.
Any questions? Yes.
So were these Magi, the wise men,
yes,
were they Hebrew?
No.
Or were they, they knew that this was the Messiah?
Yes.
Were these people still around when Yeshua was prophet?
They must have been reading something or knew something, right?
Yeah, well, God showed them.
Right? They didn't have the Torah with them.
No, but God showed it to them in a dream.
Maybe. Ah, okay.
Maybe they did.
They had the writings of Daniel.
Okay, well, we're going to go back to the time of Daniel. Okay, because basically these where these guys came from. The men of the East came from where we would call Babylon. Because Daniel was called a what in Babylonian language?
Astrologer or a Chaldean.
A Magi. He was chief Magi.
Who was?
Daniel.
He was the chief of the wise men.
Now, he was in charge of it. Once Nebuchadnezzar, he got the answer, he put Daniel, very, very young man, probably maybe in the teens or early 20s, very young, and put him in charge of teaching the Magi. Because Daniel had been given, quote, insight, or God was dealing with him to teach him. So basically, by the time this came on, they were well aware of the prophecies that Daniel talked. They knew more in detail the prophecies of Daniel than anybody else in the East.
Daniel was the one that told them what time to start looking for him.
Yes, exactly. Told him what time to look for him. He told him exactly what was going to take place. And he would, being who he was, which, by the way, the Jewish... Judaism refuses to accept and acknowledge that Daniel was a prophet. That's why when you take a look at the Tanakh, they have deliberately put the book of Daniel in what's called the writings. Even Jesus calls Daniel a prophet. Of course, Jesus also calls David a prophet. But you know, it's very fact, because they don't want to acknowledge the mere fact that Daniel was correct. So they deliberately put him in the writings. And in Jewish synagogues, what do they read?
The Torah.
And? Haftorah. They don't go any farther. So the average Jewish person is not fully aware of what Daniel had to say. They're not fully aware of hardly what anything in the what called Old Testament has to say, because they do, I'm sorry, but a lot of Christians do. There's a preacher up there, preacher's telling them exactly, and they believe, oh, the preacher's telling the truth, and that was it, let's go home and have a cup of coffee, or let's chicken. And Jewish, you'd have chicken soup. And that's the end of the story. I mean, because their life is like anybody else's life. You go to synagogue, you do what you're supposed to do, and then go back home, and you may even go to work. You may go back to your store and buy and sell. It has no bearing on your life, you know? So the average Jewish person is like the average Christian who does what they do on Sunday. Oh, I gotta go hear this guy preach for a couple hours, maybe 15 minutes. And if I'm real good, I'll just back row and I'll fall asleep. Won't have a slightest idea what he has to say. And you get back up and you go home, you know? But it's no different than in a synagogue. And like in a lot of the Christian world, all right, there's basically two times a year they make sure they go to church. What is it?
Christmas, Easter.
Christmas, Easter. All right. In Judaism, there are two times a year they make sure they go to synagogues. What is it?
Passover.
And Day of Atonement. So, hey, Christians just picked up the habits the Jews did. No different between two. Just pick different days, that's all.
I would call them CNE Christians.
All right, so we have an idea of what we're talking about here, that these men... Did you have a question?
In verse 2 it says, we have seen this star from the horizon.
Correct.
What star is that to talk about? Certain.
They're the only ones that saw it. When did they see it?
At least 2 years earlier.
They saw it when?
At least two years earlier. Never stood out before that.
And they knew they had to go west to
Bethlehem.
They didn't know exactly where it was at, but they had to ask, remember? Daniel?
There's a commentary, I can't remember the guy's name. He wrote it in the Exegesis book magazine that came out.
Magi's.
No, the few few weeks ago, months or whatever. He was saying that from the viewpoint of the people who were traveling east, one thing is that a star, when it shows up, we all know it's just at night time. We always get see stars in the day. So, and stars travel along from east to west as opposed to as the Earth rotates. So in order for them to see from the east, they'd only be a temporary thing. They see that it shows up and then it'd be gone the following day kind of thing. But they wouldn't be able to see them from Jerusalem or Bethlehem. All they know is it's that direction.
It's that direction, and they go.
Jerusalem first, lost the place of shoes.
Because of the prophecy of Daniel.
Yeah, it's interesting that it wasn't a star that anybody else saw. It was only up there for a single shot, just long enough for them to see that it happened. And then.
Because they were observing the heavens.
Astronomy.
Which we go back to Abraham. Okay? What did God tell Abraham? Look up.
For your redemption draws nigh.
your descendants will number as the stars. I had good eyesight. I don't. I couldn't see that bad. I couldn't see that well. But David, but that was passed on through generation to generation, all the way to David. Daniel. Now Daniel was a magi. We hate that word, magician. But the truth is, that's what it was. It's like when you look at the real title of Joseph, you say, oh, what a horrible title. No, he went by that title because when he went by that title, all of Egypt responded to him. Yes?
Well, perhaps it's one of those things that magi could fall into the realm of the mysteries of the universe, so to speak.
Yeah.
There are those that try to tap into the mysteries of the universe through divination and this and that and the other. And those, like Paul mentions that about the mysteries of God.
Correct.
It's the same thing. There are those, there is within each of us a sense of the other, that we're a part of something else. You know, we've got these people next door that are worshiping the goddess because they sense that there is something else. They sense there is a mystical other. And people try to tap into that mystical other through various means. Worship creation because creation sensed it. When you actually reflect on the natural world, there is some bit of mystery in its sense of purpose. And people then would worship things because of that sense of purpose.
And one thing that in the book of Revelations, he looked up and he saw what in the heavens? Signs. Now, in Judaism, they look up and see what's called the signs of heaven. The heavens tells them something. It tells them the course and the direction that God is working. And it has turned into a pagan worship by and through what's called the signs of the zodiac, which is spoken of in the book of Job. And so we're saying, and there's how many signs are there?
12.
Is that coincidental or was it designed that way? And so when Abraham looked up there, we think he looked up there as the one that's an awful line up there. I got a funny feeling he looked up there for several days and perhaps a whole year. And he saw the outcome, which I cannot see no matter how hard I look. I can tell a big dipper and a small dipper. And the only reason why I know is there because someone told me the North Star is at the tail end of one of them handles. I said, okay. That's about as far as I know about the stars and the heavens. Okay, I'm really, really brilliant about this stuff, right? Anyway.
Of course, you can see better at night when there's not all the city lights.
Yes, right.
They didn't have electricity, so it was dark.
And actually, it's better when you're farther north.
Right.
Yeah, when you're farther south, it's hard to see it. South of the equator, you don't see it at all.
It still looks like a black sky with a stars.
But anyway.
You don't see pictures.
So we have these magi who did something, and they studied the heavens. Yes.
In verse 9, that they heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star, which they saw at its rising, went before them, until
right.
It came and stood over the place where the young child was born.
Look carefully, it says, the star which they had seen in the east, not what they had seen all the way to Bethlehem.
Like
now the star comes back into presence. It's there again. And now they see the star move and it stops. Now they're the only ones that got to see it. Why? Because they're looking up.
Well, people who also study the sky know when something's out of place and there's something new there.
Yeah.
So if they were quite big if they were big students of the sky, they would look up and see, whoa, that's out of place. I've never seen that before. If it was very spectacular, even more so.
But then once again, they might have thought, oh, what we use today, it's a falling star.
Yeah.
But these are also people that they're not people who think, oh, that's just a coincidence. Oh, that's happenstance. Everything that happened in the sky in their life had meaning.
I remember, an angelic being can expose himself to being bright.
Right.
And so we're looking at an angelic being who really light lit up the sky for those guys to see. Yes.
Well, yeah, this is a legit, like, a real star.
Real star, right.
And you know where you're standing, all stars look like right above you.
Yes. So this one moved and stopped.
This is the exact house. Well,
yeah. Sometimes I wonder if it was Gabriel. I wonder if it was Gabriel or Michael. Yes.
Well, God led Israel by a cloud and by fire, so right. It would be too hard to condense that down.
Right. To a great degree, it's only my personal thinking. It had to be one of the four angels, the archangels that are there. You know, I wouldn't describe it as Michael himself. That's just my thinking. I might be wrong. What time of the year was this? This took, 2 years later. So, it probably, it could be in the fall season. We don't know exactly the pinpoint of the time.
But Jesus' birth, bringing gifts, reminds me of Christmas.
Well, it may remind you of Christmas, but that's not what, that's not what a righteous man would do. If you come before the President of the United States, what would you do?
Bow, curtsy.
Hi, who are you? No. You would honor him with respect. You give him honor and give him respect because that's who he is.
You always bring a gift.
Not always, not American custom. But I'm saying you give him respect. Now, the tradition back then, when you come to a king, if you want the king to hear your case, you better come up with something here. So the king will hear your case. All right? And this particular one, they're giving what? Myrrh and frankincense and gold. Now, prophetically speaking, we won't go there today because I didn't plan for it. Prophetically speaking, when he returns the second time, he only gets frankincense and not myrrh. He gets the gold and he gets the frankincense, but not the myrrh. What's the myrrh used for? Anointing for the death. So these magi's knew from Daniel the event that was going to happen to this particular child who was about 2 years old or older at this point in time.
Yeah, because they got the whole story.
They got the whole story. So, once again, we see here, God, quote, has made himself aware to men who are godly men, but they are not part of the promise. The line doesn't, a promise doesn't go through them. Will they receive the promise? Obviously. Because they went to see the real king of the Jews, the one that was sent to do something, and that is to deliver and be the Messiah. They understood that. They were not dumb men who just said, "Oh, guess I saw a star, better go follow it." No, they knew who the creator of heaven and earth were. Because what'd they do? They sat down there and they did what? They worshiped him. Now, they're not a bunch of pagans worshiping a bunch of, human beings. These guys studied the star. They knew exactly what it was all about. And so now we have these men. We don't know how many they are, by the way. Tradition has it's three because it's three gifts, right? Not necessarily. We don't know how many there have been men. What if there were 12? No, I don't want to go there. Yes.
And I don't know if it was probably in this group because I've been in this group for a long time, but there's some discussion as to, three men wouldn't travel that kind of distance alone. I mean, it's dangerous. There's robbers.
You have a caravan.
Right. So it's even if there was three wise men, there certainly wasn't three men.
No, they would have a caravan home with you. Yeah. So we don't know how many there were with the party, with the group, and that's very true. Yeah. Or how many there were.
It's kind of interesting when you look at things historically, because at that time period, the area of Babylon, east of the Euphrates River, was under control of the Empire of Parthia, which was the foil of Rome at that time. The Roman army fought some pitched battles with the Parthian Empire over the Euphrates River and could not ever get past it. So it was pretty much, there was a bit of a detente at this time period between Parthia and Rome. So to have a delegation tromping toward Jerusalem from Parthia.
Looking for a king of the Jews.
Yeah, no wonder they were a bit excited in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Daniel.
All right. One of the issues that due to the same reasons that afflicted the Jews for preventing from worshiping or traveling on high days, since there are no high days during the wintertime. These guys probably didn't travel during the winter either. They most likely traveled during spring, summer, and then camps through the fall. And they held out for their trek during the wintertime, didn't bother going because it's all muddy and snowy and cold and miserable. So it would have taken them quite a long time to get there, and three men for 2 years traveling is
ridiculous.
You have to have quite a bit of crops, but cattle and every other thing that goes with you to survive for 2 years on this trek.
Well, and the other thing is, if it was just three men, if they could possibly have enough provisions, which three men probably couldn't, they could make that. I mean, if it was traveling nonstop, they could make that in much less than 2 years, right?
Yeah. I think on foot, supposedly you can make it in about 8 months. Walking that trek, nonstop.
Okay.
You're either going to have to go or come back.
But reality is, no one can do that.
Before we go, I want to go one more step further here on this point. What does this have to do with Rachel weeping?
With what?
Rachel weeping.
Because they killed all the babies, 2 years and under.
Verse
all the boys.
That's from Jeremiah chapter 31.
Uh-huh.
Where's that at? Somehow that's connected with... Isn't that the same chapter or one of the chapters of the New Covenant?
Yes, it is.
31.
Chapter 31 is the
New Covenant. Correct. Well, now, before we go, what was Benjamin's name before he was called Benjamin?
Benoni or something like that?
What does it mean?
Son of my suffering.
Son of my sorrow. Son of my pain. Now, we have this picture in our mind that she must have died at childbirth. Because we don't have any reason for it. When we look at that, you say, now, that's an unusual story. Now, why was it important for us to find out that she named the boy, son of my sorrow? I'm going to weep. I'm going to cry. Was she telling us something deep in the future?
Because it's interesting, right after this passage in Jeremiah 31, in verse 16, right after it says this about Rachel weeping for her children, this is what the Lord says: restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded, declares the Lord. They will return from the land of the enemy. So there is hope for your future, declares the Lord. Your children will return to their own land. I surely heard Ephraim's moaning. You discipline me like an unruly calf, and I have been disciplined. Restore me, and I will return, because you are the Lord my God. After I strayed, I repented. After I came to understand, I beat my breast. I was ashamed and humiliated because I bore the disgrace of my youth. Is not Ephraim my dear son, the child in whom I delight? Though I often speak against him, I still remember him. Therefore, my tears, my heart yearns for him. I have great compassion for him, declares the Lord.
We're getting a little bit picture of what was going on. Rachel did read the prophecy of Rachel weeping. It wasn't necessary for us to tell us that, why she named him that. Because if she died, quote, childbirth, how could she name him? What was the tradition of naming a child? On the eighth day. Now, she died at childbirth. Her last words were, son of my sorrow. That's a horrible name to name a child, right? And who renamed him?
Dad.
Who?
Jacob.
Jacob. All right. Why did he rename him?
Because
And the question comes in, when did he rename him? There's a reason in the Torah as to why he was called Son of My Sorrow. And the reason in the Torah why Jacob changed it to Benjamin. Benjamin means son of my right hand. Unusual, odd terminology to name a boy. Question. Of all of Joseph's sons, who did he love the most?
Jacob's.
Why?
They were Rachel's children.
Let's get more closer. What was different about Joseph than any of the other brothers, including Benjamin?
He had dreams.
He had dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he had dreams, then Jacob knew God is working through that boy. And therefore, he cherished him more. Because that boy was being dealt with directly by God. The promise was going to go through him. Okay? That is a symbolism of the promise. Now, when he found out that, in his firm belief, that Joseph was dead, what did he do?
Couldn't handle it.
And his only other hope for a possibility was Son of My Sorrow. So he renamed him Son of My Right Hand, because basically Joseph was his right hand man, but not anymore.
Well, Joseph was his firstborn.
Of the promise. That's interesting to note, those little things. The Bible just doesn't have stories in there because, oh, it just happened. Oh, no, it's specifically in precise order and fashion.
So you say Rachel didn't die from childbirth?
Does it? That's just tradition. There is nothing there. It says she died. She said as she was dying, but we were assuming she died because of childbirth. We're assuming that she died because of childbirth. But doesn't tell us that.
Well, they buried her on the side of the road.
Correct.
Yeah.
Did he take her back to the tomb of the patriarchs?
No.
No, did not turn back to the patriarchs.
Well, I have a star on that verse in Jeremiah 31.
31?
Because Christ came through her, down through that lineage.
But he didn't.
Christ was not a Benjamite.
She wasn't.
Nor was he a Josephite. There's a prophecy in Psalms we haven't gone through yet. But, you know, when we look at these things, you start saying, what is more to it than just a story here? Why must he call his son out of Egypt? Prophecy says he called Israel out of Egypt.
Yeah, we were called out of Egypt.
Why would he call him out of Egypt for? Why was it important that he call him out of Egypt? You're something to think about, right? Why did he call him out of Babylon? Why did he call him out of Rome? Why did he call him out of? Why did he call him out of Egypt?
Well, Egypt was represented in sin and slavery and bondage.
It represented sorrow. The people wept and cried out
to be delivered. So there's a lot of things that you have, and all your answers are pretty close to being right. I mean, there's a lot of combination with what you're coming out into. But it is true that he's coming out of, in a sense, out of the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life, as well as the sorrow, as well as the suffering, as well as the bondage. So Egypt represents a lot of different things. And also, Scripture says, Egypt is my beloved. We can't picture that. That's the enemy, isn't it? No. It says he's my beloved. So we say, how can that be beloved? Well, because in Egypt, he called his son out. In Egypt, he called his son out. So Egypt had to be special. Abraham affected with Egypt. Isaac was, and God says, don't go down there. So he didn't. Joseph went down there. Jacob went down there. All of Israel went down there. They all came back out. Ellie?
Well, Rachel had a death sentence hanging over her head from a while before that, though.
Well, then...
The idol thing.
Okay, and I read a lot of commentaries about that, and we can assume this, we can assume that. The Hebrew word there is an unusual word. It can mean idol, and it can mean an object.
Well,
of worship to her father, but not to her.
Okay.
I'm
not saying that's why.
Because what Jacob said.
Yeah.
Because of what Jacob said. Not because of what she had done.
We're at a point here, okay? We're at a point here where now all of a sudden here comes the second birth and she's dead. It's not because of Jacob's curse upon her. It's because of propheticness that was put upon her by God itself. Daniel.
I don't know if I agree with that statement you just made, in that she could have named her child anything.
Well, she didn't.
She could have still named him Son of My Sorrow and lived.
Yeah.
She could have still named him that. So, in my perspective, right or wrong, I think it has more to do with Jacob's statement and her actions that caused God to essentially obey Jacob's request and his declaration.
Okay.
That seems to make more sense to me. I don't think she necessarily died in childbirth per se. She may or may not have, I don't really care. But the cause of her death was necessarily the child. I think it was more Jacob's proclamation and about the agreement between him
and yeah, and you could be right about that particular point. Other one, yes.
It says, and they journeyed to Bethel, and there was a little distance to go to Ephrah. Rachel travailed in childbirth. She had hard labor. Now it came to pass that she was in hard labor, that the midwife said to her, do not fear, you will have this son also. And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. That sounds about as died in childbirth as I can imagine.
That's probably true. Yeah, I go with it. Yes.
When you think about one of the reasons about the suffering over Rachel suffering over her children, one of the interesting things about that is that this prophecy in Jeremiah 31 is calling about Ephraim's mourning. Ephraim was a son of Joseph.
Correct.
So who are Rachel's children?
Yep.
Joseph and Benjamin.
Yeah.
The sons of Joseph are Ephraim and Manasseh. So this prophecy in 31 is about Ephraim returning. That's what Rachel is moaning about. This is the prophecy
of grandchildren.
The return of Ephraim. Those are the children that are no more, because they're scattered all over the place.
Takes the Messiah to bring them home.
Yeah, Messiah is going to bring them home.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very cool. That's a good point. Very good point.
And see, that is what Messiah came as, the light to the nations, the light to the Gentiles, the light. He is lighting the way home for Rachel's children.
That's why I find it so fascinating that in Jewish tradition, she is loved so much. Everybody knows that Judah's mother was Leah, but yet in Jewish tradition and Jewish spirituality a lot of times, they don't really talk about Leah much, but they talk a lot about Rachel. Rachel's tomb is special. They have, the armed guards, and, they're in Bethlehem, and they have, large, basically, fortress around her grave so that Jews can visit her. The whole thing with the red string and all that being around Rachel, and, they pass out those red strings when you go to Jerusalem. It's all about Rachel. It's all about Rachel, Rachel, Rachel. And I find it utterly fascinating that there is such this love for Rachel, even though... strictly speaking, she's not their mother. She's a
That's a fascinating approach. I have to agree with you there. I don't have a complete answer for it, but that's fascinating. Maybe a lot of those Jews don't know it, but maybe they are Ephraimites. Okay.
One more comment. Jeff just read a lot. So, though, yeah, in Jeremiah, there's references to Rachel discussing her children with Ephraim and even particular Manasseh. But the fact that Matthew felt it important to bring that statement here at this application, with both Ephraim and Manasseh are long since gone, they're out, who knows where they're at. And he's using the reference that she's weeping. From what I gather, if you're wrong, because of the killing from Herod of the children, the people who are in Israel, which are not from Ephraim, not from Manasseh, they're everybody else, which is right. The tribes.
Probably. And the Benjaminites were.
Yeah, that's one of them. That's true. Benjamin is one of them. I think it's beyond just Ephraim returning that she's weeping about. There has to be something much greater than that. I think the reason why Jewish tradition supports Rachel much more than Leah, because she's like the honorary mother of everybody, almost. All of children are essentially from Rachel, essentially, as far as the not physically, but as far as how she is treated. Like, all the other three women didn't count. I think why Matthew felt it important to bring her up in this scenario, even though Ephraim and Manasseh aren't even there.
It's also an interesting thing. I'll be blessed like Ephraim and Manasseh, too. Yeah. I know. It's interesting.
Yeah. To Daniel's point there about why this would be about Rachel's children and Bethlehem and Herod going after the children of Bethlehem, because in that going after the children of Bethlehem, he was looking to get this coming Messiah. If he had gotten the Messiah, that would have cut off and left no hope for the return of Ephraim.
I agree.
That's a good point.
Okay, because the...
You understand how we discussed these things, didn't it?
Jesus says, I didn't...
We'll learn a lot of things.
He's talking to the Jews. I didn't come for you. I came for the lost children. The way back for Manasseh and Ephraim was the Messiah. Without the Messiah, there was no way back for those lost.
And everyone connected with them.
And everybody connected with them.
Okay, we've solved that problem. The reason why I like this discussion is because you guys got some ideas that I didn't think about, and it's really profitable. We're learning together a lot.
Okay.
Yes.
One of the things that the Jews don't see that, Daniel, is because if you talk to the Jews say, well, Ephraim and Manasseh, all those people eventually came back. They don't see a divide in the family to where part of it's still gone. So they wouldn't put that together that this is our way home.
Yeah, because think about that. If you had succeeded in if Haman had succeeded in taking out the Jews, you would not have had, Judah, the return of Judah to Israel,
right.
They would have succeeded at the time of Antiochus Epiphanes of wiping out Israel. That would have been the end of it.
Okay.
There were these certain points down through time that people have tried. The serpent has been striking at Jacob a lot until finally Messiah had come and stepped on and crushed his head.
Interesting. Second half, huh? We all learn so many different things, so many new things, and try to understand. Now, these things are written for us to understand, and they're just not written there as a story. It's written there for us to find out the purpose behind all the words, the purpose behind everything that's being said, so we can have a clearer picture of what it is that the prophecy talks about. Okay, let's close the prayer here. Eternal God, come, thank you, and thank you for today and helping us to see. Hope, open up our minds and our eyes to see and understand your word. Guide and direct our thinking, guide and direct our directions, and most of all, Father, guide our feet and guide our hands and guide our eyes. We thank you in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.